welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Nick, Becca, and Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
And we've got another special guest today. We're bringing back Rob.
Hello.
Welcome back, Rob.
Oh, it feels like I've been here for 5 minutes.
Now, I feel like we did you a disservice only having you on once last season. We're going to have to try and fix that this year.
Well, definitely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to like coming up with wonderful answers and asking new questions.
What has been seeing play at your table over the last 2 or 3 months?
I'm playing in it's an Eyes of the Stonefeast campaign, but it has taken the characters a little while to level up. We started very, very low in order to like sort of have to get to know our characters leveling up. And as of the last session, we were, you know, I'm basically turning off my brain and trying not to remember anything I know about Eyes of the Stonefeast. And so last session, we attended a ritual that summoned the Stonefeast and we were swallowed. So... Yes, down the gullet, and I think that the campaign is now going to be hitting full speed, and I'm playing the monk.
Yeah,
and this is a campaign where Jonathan is playing he's not really a cleric, he's a spirit talker, but he's a renamed cleric. And his character had the background, what was it? Give me a second. Physical agent. Which was like, that seems broad. And my character had the background, metaphysical artist.
Between the two of us, we were cheesily sort of, despite any advice we'd given, being choosing ridiculously broad, vague background. And we have both been chastened into making them more strange. I believe I'm now a magical historian.
Nice.
A history of magic.
How different is it for you to be a player? Like, are you seeing
anything?
Know
the story. I bet you do, JM. You know exactly how this is. It's really difficult. It's really hard. It's hard in that sense of... I remember being an absolutely terrible player early in my life. I mean, I remember there was somebody in Eugene who was running a game of Talislanta, and I played in it, and I was just the worst, awful player, and I shudder to think about it. And so in a weird way, the track of being a game master and being a player, they really are, in that sense of playing well with others and being kind at the table and making sure everybody has fun. You need to do that differently and different when you're a player. And I find it, so I finally have maybe adjusted a bit to it, but how many of, okay, so Mark, you game master some.
Yes, I run a weekly game and I play in jam, several jams games.
And Becca, you run games.
Yes, I do. My D&D game hasn't met for several months and I feel really bad about that, but oops.
Okay, so you're sort of you're dormant, but not by choice.
Yeah.
Right. And so, Nick, you're the one of us then completely who really starts as more of a player and then sometimes game masters.
I game master a biweekly game, and then I play in a couple of games beyond that.
Yeah, we got Nick into running a lot more now.
Okay, good. Thanks. All right. Well, I've much more recently become an okay player. And so I apologize to all the game masters who might have had to put up with really, really stupid things I did early in the And the expression of our game is, you know, don't chum the dungeon, which is when the game master trying to figure things out, players offering wonderful advice that helps the game master be even nastier. And I think we've sort of turned it into a desired art form. And I personally, now that I've got the ball rolling, perhaps do a little less of it. So try to stay out of it. So yeah, it's fun, but it's such a different responsibility in terms of what you're thinking about as a player. And I also think, and I think Jonathan really teases me about this, but I have a terrible habit of playing characters that are quite similar. Mm. If I'm going to be in a long-term campaign, I do play characters that are quite similar. When I was playing in a HeroQuest Glorantha, I was Janky Two-Step, a devotee of the cat god who moved really quickly and tore things apart, you know. And when I played in this Jonathan Telesaba game, I was a half gnome psychic warrior who, tore things apart with her. I was like, wait a minute, and now I'm playing a monk. Yeah.
We've talked in the past about characters really just being ideas that we are embodying. And I find that for long-term games, it's easier to go back to that same idea and just tweak it a little bit.
They kind of are avatars, though we don't think of it that way.
Right.
Often, of course, we'll have a character who has a funny voice. He almost always a spellcaster who has a funny way of speaking. It's going to be something. So, yep.
Now, you did mention there's a lot of stuff going on in 13th Age right now as far as like publications and upcoming releases and those sorts of things. Probably one of the more soon-to-be-released ones is Shards of the Broken Sky. And I just want to offer our congratulations on getting that completed and almost to print.
Well, I'm actually... The thing I'm not doing at this moment is finishing the page XX references, which is what I was doing yesterday and, in fact, part of the day before. So there's an awful lot of them.
I loathe having to do that. It's looming on the horizon for me.
What? No. It's a type of final polish that means you're really actually done and all you're doing is... And honestly, other people could do it, but the weird part about it is if you do it yourself with your own book, you notice things that you want to have noticed. For instance, there were a whole bunch of monsters I designed and had it put in the new monster list at the back because somehow that just slipped my brain. And, you know, if you do the page X's yourself, you find that out.
So you're saying it's not something to fear, but something to embrace.
Maybe it's personality based, so you don't have to tell me, but maybe you're just in a personal shock after that whole dissertation thing. Doing it for your own game book will actually be fun. That's my hope for you.
So as you've been kind of going back through this over and over again, trying to get all of the page references correct, has anything stood out to you as like, this is my favorite part of this book?
Okay, so I guess you just have to go with the first thing that comes to mind when somebody asks you a question. Walsh did a really crazy little thing. There's a sort of a floating giant corpse and of a sort of a god. Low-level player characters can climb the bottom, but as you go higher up the body, you'd better be higher your level yourself. And I just found that quite amusing, the way I managed to finally make it work. Definitely wild and strange. So that was a fun part. You guys have actually seen it.
We have. We did a review on it.
I like the new, the Oozefolk and the Ophidians and the Lava Dwarves that are at the end as characters. I thought that they're fun people to play. I am really amused at a book that can, you know, the sandbox nature of like, this campaign could be about this, and then this other campaign, that will never happen because of what the player characters, how they're oriented. So I like that aspect of the book too. Mm-hmm.
So, Sam, you're working on kind of finalizing things, touching things up, last pass through of edits and that sort of thing. Any idea on like a target release date?
Oh my goodness. No, it's going to be on sale already. The laid out version as a PDF will be available.
And then a couple of months after that for the print book.
Awesome.
Cool. So you were saying you were playing Eyes of the Stone Thief in your home game and you're converting it to 5th edition.
Well, in fact, the word you in this is going to have to be expanded to Pelgrane. Gareth, the author of Eyes of the Stone Thief, did the 5e conversion. And I, in fact, wasn't involved at all. So I don't know much about it. So I handled the OGL text.
Uh-huh.
You know, that open gaming licensing stuff, making sure you get that straight.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I actually didn't touch it, which is just a matter of happenstance, really. But Gareth, I think, handled it. So I can't answer many specific questions.
What was the prompting to do so, like to convert from 13th Age to 5th edition? And does Pelgrane have plans to do that with anything else?
I think the 5th edition has been enormously successful.
Yes.
So there's an element of when there are companies going ahead and adapting their games towards 5th edition that I would not have expected to have that happen, but here they are. I'm reasonably certain that Pelgrane wants to go ahead and showcase 13th Age and pieces of things that 13th Age has created. And so one fun way to like put that out to a broader audience, and really it is a broader audience, is to go ahead and like do some sort of conversion. Eyes of Stone Peak is such a cool, fantastic concept and adventure, but I don't precisely know which, like how Gareth oriented the translation. I know that if I was going to go ahead and do a translation, I would be trying to like showcase certain things that 13th Age mechanics do that 5e mechanics don't, but you have to always be really careful with that because the point is, does 5e actually need that or want that? And I think the answer is in a couple cases that it could, and in other cases the answer is probably not. And so, yeah. So the answer is that I think Haldane might. I'm sure that like if you go ahead and do something like Eyes of the Stone Thief and it does really well, then you'd be thinking, hey, yeah, let's do something else.
Yeah, you'd almost be silly not to do something else.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yes.
Rob, I did the math and I looked on Wikipedia, which was basically my two bits of research into this next question here. But 13th Age released 6 years ago.
Wiki math.
Right, wiki math.
And when you say 6 years ago, do you mean was it June 2013?
I think it was August was when the book released.
And the PDF would have been out earlier.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I figured we'd take some time and just do a look back at it. I know the initial impetus for it was you and Jonathan had worked on 3rd and 4th edition, and neither of you were really running games like 3rd or 4th edition, and so wanted to kind of come together and do your own take on it that maybe didn't have any, I'll use the term corporate oversight for lack of a better one.
Sure.
Corporate imperatives. But is there any part of that story that hasn't been told? Were there any struggles getting it to market? Like,
okay, well, I could tell a couple untold stories. I suspect I can.
Well, even if we have to cut them, now I'll tell you what, I'm super intrigued.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I will tell you a story or two. Jonathan and I were both, for a little while there, we were both not employed. We were both I was doing freelance work for sure. He was thinking about it. And so we were like, hey, let's design a game together. Cause we had done that several times at Wizards where we'd worked on Chainmail, and then we worked on D&D minis together. We'd worked on the Dreamblade miniatures game together. And we'd been playing each other's, versions of D&D. And so we wanted to work together on something, and it just made sense to us. Well, what do we know best? And the answer was, well, what we know best is doing D20 fantasy role-playing games. And we were like, well, then let's design the game we'd like to play together. Now, at the time, I had just gotten involved in starting a company named Fire Opal Games with my business partner, Jay Schneider, who was one of the people who designed some... Jay designed one of the best known early magic decks, the Sly deck. And he is a sort of a polymath who is presently actually designing magic decks again and streaming them along with all the other things he does. And Jay and the company Fire Opal, I had been working designing a digital game. But my work on the digital game was kind of done as designer. And so it was like, oh, and what do I do now? And the answer is create work for myself by this role-playing game. And at that time, well, the first thing that happened was that Fire Opal really got interested because Fire Opal saw the opportunity to create something which hadn't been done, which was a really digitally savvy, fully supported role-playing game with digital apps as part of it and support for readers and things like that. And can you tell something that didn't happen? Yes, that didn't happen. And we actually, there were early on meetings with various tech companies. And I am not exactly positive. I think that eventually it really just looked like that we were for a project that was supposed to be giving tabletop role-playing game designers something really fun to do that maximized their strengths. We were attempting to push an envelope that did not really want to be pushed easily. And I don't know if it was me or if other people, really, I cannot no longer tell you, but it was just like, no. Let us simplify and just do what we know how to do and let our current digital efforts continue on their own track. And so, you know, at this point, as you can tell, I mean, 13th Age does not have a huge digital presence in terms of like it's, you know, there are things on the Roll 20 and Fantasy Grounds, but we're not really huge there. And we didn't design our own apps really to support it. Even though my company sort of does have that expertise, it's been focused in other places. So that is one of the untold stories. And actually, in a certain sense, I'm pretty sure it was because I was in the driver's seat that it didn't happen. Hmm. You know, I did what I knew rather than attempting to push into a fully different arena at that moment. And I could imagine, you know, as you say, it's 6 years later, I could imagine re-entering the arena in a different way. But I'm really happy that we went ahead and did it as a tabletop role-playing game that was more traditional at that time, because the digital efforts were not going to be on time. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think I was late. Well, and I was.
Well, I will say that you guys having released so much as SRD material has really allowed the community to kind of step in and fill a little bit of that digital gap. And like I said, there's not necessarily a lot, but the community is empowered by that.
We have it on Fantasy Grounds as well now, which is awesome. Mm-hmm.
And I use some of the stuff that the fans have done. You know, when I'm putting together books, I actually am using some of the monster stuff that fans have done and putting it together sessions. And I'm pretty happy about that. So it's good.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that's one story about what didn't happen. There's also been two times in my life that games that I had helped create either were destroyed or burnt down and had to be redone. And the second time were better. And you guys know that 13th Age was one of those, right?
No, I don't think any of us have heard this story.
Early in my life, there was the first Shadowfist set card game, Hong Kong action movie card game designed by Robin Laws and Jose Garcia. And I had really helped design the Flashpoint set and had helped art direct it. And it got destroyed by somebody who was cleaning out of a computer so they could make it their own. And they didn't realize that computer was the main graphics computer that had this hard drive waiting to go to the printer. Now, that's not so bad because, honestly, there were backups, right? Both of which failed.
Oh, no.
Nick is crying right now.
I think that was the early days of digital backups in the sense that, you know, hey, you use this drive and the drive does this and this, like, or the drive just hiccups, coughs, and says, I don't understand. And it's like, oh, so that card set was lost. I think, I don't know, call it 180, 200 cards, at least that. And so we recreated it. And the funny part about it was the time it took to recreate it was not good. But simultaneously, that card set was a lot better. But it was done again. You know, it was really quite good. Well, 13th Age, I'd finished the icon index and I was doing the regular index on a morning and got a piece of email from Toronto from our layout artist, Chris Huth. And it just had a newspaper article, picture of a newspaper article in the Toronto newspaper that was about a fire in an apartment building. Oh, no. It's kind of one of those cryptic, what? And then I started making phone calls and discovered that, yes, Chris's apartment had burned down. And at that moment, he wasn't doing offsite backups. He had other backups, but they burnt. And so luckily, the reason I can tell the story like this is I don't think anybody was hurt in this. I don't even think the cats were hurt in this apartment fire. And we had to lay the book out again. We got Chris a new computer and we laid it out again. And when I say we, I mean he. Yeah. I was involved. I mean, the whole thing is with layout books like that, I was like, you know, seeing every draft and commenting and working on stuff. And Chris would say, oh, we need, you know, another 150 words to fill this page. And I would be like, oh, well, I'll do a sidebar.
So I think this story has been told, but now it has been told again.
Now it has been told again, and it will be preserved in the Iconic Archives.
There we go.
You might even say it's now backed up.
Oh.
Too soon.
It might be a little too soon.
That's right.
But that's an iconic Nick one-liner that just falls flat.
Well, thank you so much for backing it up. Yeah. As a game design tool, I mean, honestly, there might be something to learn here. The truth is, the second time you do something, you always improve it. And so I don't recommend this, but I will acknowledge that it has, you know, some people might wonder if the same thing was done to 13th Age Garampa. But no, that just took a while. That one carried straight on.
So the takeaway from that, dear listeners, is back up your work.
That's right.
Off-site.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
I know. I nowadays I'm like, I can't even imagine that world.
So after 6 years of this wonderful game, what's your favorite mechanic that you've either used or just that you designed?
Oh, I don't think this would be news to anybody. I mean, the piece of the game that I love is the one unique thing in terms of how it integrates players, you know, people's creativity from the very start. And yeah, it gives people a feel that they have something to contribute to the world from the very beginning. And it's, yeah, I love that. I still like the escalation die, and I like it with my long-term players because they, you know, curse me out at the beginning of every combat and say I've done it now. You know, this is a bullshit game and you're a bullshit ref. Trying to kill us all. And, you know, and then 3 rounds in, they're like, hey, we got this. And new players, you know, they don't have any idea it's coming. And then they're like, oh, hey, wait, what? So, yeah, I like those two things.
Yeah. Well, if you could add one class to the game, what would you want it to be?
But I can add.
So, since you can, what will it be?
But that would be telling.
You know, you can tell me.
Rob,
we're now BFFs. Yes. You can tell me.
No, I can't.
I'll win you over eventually.
Nice try, but these were the droids we were looking for. I have answers to that question. I have multiple answers to that question. Uh-huh. And I get to indulge them. And wait, here's a piece of creativity I definitely know. When there's something really fun that you are going to do and you're doing it, or you don't talk about it before it's done. You just do it, because talking about it before it's done doesn't help you actually do it. It just gets people excited about something that who knows how well it'll go. I've done enough character class stuff that hasn't actually worked properly. Oh, in fact, JM and I, yeah, sure. When I was working on 13th Age Galantha, I really worked on designing a healer class.
Mm-hmm.
And because 13th Age Galantha, they have a Chelana Aroy, the healing goddess. And people have wanted to play a healing class. You know, it's definitely something that some people really, really want to play. And I eventually decided that the impact on the game of the character class I was trying to design was bad enough that I did not want to do it. That it was just that the reasons why it seems like a good idea don't actually make it a good idea. And even though I had interesting, quote, interesting in terms of, oh, this is an elegant, interesting mechanic, that the impact on gameplay was actually awful. Terrible. And so that's part of the reason why I don't want to talk about character class design right while I'm doing it. There is an element of thing, and because I did talk about that one, and you know, well, it ended up not working.
Right.
Luckily, not many people really heard me. So mentioning it now, I'm fine saying it, because I'll just say I'm probably not doing that, even though we gave it a good shot, two or three good shots. And character classes are weird that way. There's an element of you, ideally, when you design character classes, there's a real reason they exist, and that reason is somewhat different than the reason other character classes exist.
Huh.
And because, you know, you could just say, oh, well, the reason we're doing it is just because there's a character or that name in that's popular in the D&D ethos, the environment. So, hey, we should do a character like that. But my hope, when I'm doing character class design, I'm really trying to make it something that is contributing something to the game that didn't already exist.
Right.
Alternatively, there'd be, you could be like, oh, well, it's a twist on this other thing, and therefore, and that's slightly different. And that can happen. But in that case, maybe it's a variant or there's a good reason for giving it a different name. So that's why, given that there are a number of character classes now designed, I'm playing it more cautious. And we'll say that there will be some new character classes, I think, but I will be cool. Quiet for now about what they are.
Well, hopefully this next question you'll be able to speak a little bit more freely on, and it's the idea that in the last 6 years a lot of game stuff has happened, and if you could today give players and GMs one piece of advice starting into playing 13th Age, what would it be?
Oh, well, for game masters, I think if you're starting a 13th Age campaign, one good thing to do is don't overplan from the start, because the whole point of giving characters the ability to create their own one unique thing and figure out their own icon relationships is they're telling you what they want the campaign to be about. So figure out a session or two early on that really don't necessarily plunge people into the thick of the everything you have planned for the campaign. But and then find out, after you've gotten to know the characters a little bit, which grand tapestry maybe can start be unfurling. Yeah, because I've seen it go in the way that people have started off going, oh, I really have this 13th Age campaign I want to do. And if you're going to do that, and you as a game master know from the start, well, then you should probably give people more guidance, when they're making their characters. But I kind of think that in our circles, we've had more fun with the campaigns that have been more open-ended rather than the ones that were sort of like, hey, here's the point. Right from the start. And for players, I think that maybe because you are getting to make really wonderful decisions about your character from the very start, or like ideas about them, don't be afraid of like committing to something that you have to stick with forever. Because one of the most fun ways to handle character development is to let the strange events of the game table change you. Like, the character I'm playing right now hasn't really changed yet, and that may be something that's coming up. Whereas in other campaigns, one of the things I've had a lot of fun doing is using powerful icon relationship roles and things that other characters are doing as a reason to change my own character. And to say, wait, actually I don't have a relationship with the Archmage anymore. I think I'm changing to, I've because of this mystic experience, I'm now connected to the High Druid and I'm seeing the world, in a different way. And that kind of thing can even change when the game master agrees. You can even change your one unique thing. So, with new players, yes, make up something that's really interesting to you as you start playing. But if everybody else makes up interesting stuff and the campaign goes in different directions, go ahead and change. It's okay.
I think it's good advice.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and to go on the GM part, I just started a 13th Age for my normal weekly group, and two are completely new players, and the first thing we did was Book of Ages and worked through past ages, and they loved it, and it set what the campaign... I didn't have anything to do. They planned it, and it was handed to me. It was great.
Okay, so when you say Book of Ages, then you use the Scroll of Ages in the middle.
Yeah.
To go ahead and...
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
We put the ages. They picked what groups or icons were important. And we rolled to see if they were, ascending or the Nadir. And they made up of why. Okay, well, here it says it's Nadir. What happened? And they came up with why the Thieves Guild crashed.
Yeah.
And why it happened and different things that's set for their world. It's okay. Now we're in the 13th Age. And we're stepping off. And what the past, why it's like this now. So it was great.
Oh, that's great. I'm really glad to hear that. Gareth did a really wonderful job with that. And I admit something, which is I haven't used it personally. I just, sort of like a brain exercise as I went through it several times, but I have not done it. And so I love hearing that it worked so well for the new players too. That's good. Have you done an episode about it yet?
We did do an episode on...
The Book of Ages we did. We haven't done an episode on my experience with it, but yeah, it was great because I didn't go into it like, okay, here's my campaign. It was my prep was explaining the rules and what things were, explaining icons, because these were experienced D&D players from other editions. Yeah. And it's like, okay, there's what we've got. Here's your one unique thing. And it kind of looked at me like, you're going to make up something and it's going to set stuff. And as you make things up, it becomes canon for our world. They're like, oh,
right.
Cool.
So. Cool. That's great. Yeah. Well, Book of Ages, I really, really do enjoy it. I love the fact that, you know, it's like not going to tell you precisely what happened, but it gives you an awful lot of options and you can recruit them when you like. Or the fun part about when Gareth writes books sometimes is he'll approach the same topic from three entirely different directions. And that's what happened there. You know, it's like the way what you guys did, like unscrolling the ages, isn't actually how it works in the book where he shows the sample ages, although as you know, GMs and players, you can go ahead and recruit those things back. Mm-hmm. So it's really a wonderful toolkit.
Well, to bring our interview to the close, let's end with this one, Rob.
Okay.
How do you, or how have you typically seen a 13th age campaign come to an end?
Oh my God, that is a terrible question to ask me.
Yes, achievement unlocked.
Yeah, achievement unlocked. Because, you know, the answer for me is like something like a Rolling Stones song that just doesn't quite end, but just sort of fades away. The truth is, I am so bad at finishing campaigns. I'm terrible at it. I'm terrible. I mean, because I have a very strange situation as a game master, which is that when I'm really, really quite pressed finishing 13th Age books and stuff, I tend to not run consistently. And so my players will tease me mercilessly about the number of campaigns I've started and then failed to finish. Right now, like, I think that the campaign I have that can still be considered active is my 13th Age Glorantha campaign. And it was really dormant for a while. I've rebooted it in a very, you know, in a fun way. So therefore, when was the last time that I fully ended a 13th Age campaign? The answer is, I don't know. So no, I can't even answer your question. I really can't. I've participated in campaign ends, but it hasn't been of the games that I've running. It's always like floating out there as like, hey, maybe those characters will come back, man. And I've actually fantasized about, like, you know, because I had a beloved Arduin game that my players really loved and they really liked it. And then we had a game with the bridge where the whole thing was, there's this box that has to be taken over to the other side of the bridge, but don't open the box, you know? And so the player characters never got to open the box. They, you know, and so I basically have fantasized about wrapping up all the campaigns that I haven't finished with a sort of like a multiversal coda. But as you can tell, I haven't done it. So you guys, I mean, are far better, I'm sure, at this particular subject than me. Yes.
No, if you go back and listen to our campaign, how to end a 13th Age campaign, our stories sound very similar to yours.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, there we are all together. When are we going to, is this a support group?
It is. It's become a support group.
Yep. I don't know, man. I just feel like closure is just like this. The story's over, man. And it's like, don't you just want to keep it going? I mean, I know they only gave us 10 levels, and that kind of sucks because, I mean, you have to end, but maybe if you just never let them get to level 10, you know?
Right.
16 advancements later in level 9, you're still not at level 10 yet.
I think we'll take that clip and we'll add it to the end of how to end a 13th Age campaign.
Perfect.
The first time that I started a campaign, and I ran the first maybe two sessions, and then he took over. And he took over to the extent that people don't remember that I started that game. And so I started a character. That was when I did the dwarf forged wizard named Cantilever. You know, that was a really fun campaign. But Jonathan also, that was a one level, one session campaign for the most part. Mm. And so, you know, the whole point was to push quickly all the way through playing every level, getting to know it, and then at 10th level having real closure. And Jonathan managed it, and it was great. I think that when I've done campaigns, I tend to like introduce so many weird plot threads and so much stuff happening that it just, in the end, probably spirals out of my control. Probably. You know, the Glorantha campaign, I think I've held it together much better, and so I can actually continue it. But I have to say that some of my other campaigns, I lost control. Yep, I did. Yep, definitely. Yep. So I don't know if that's what you guys said about why you don't finish, but I'll have to listen to the podcast and find out.
We won't give you any spoilers. We'll trade you spoilers for class information. Well, Rob, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's always a good time chatting with you about 13th Age. And
all right. Ask me again, and I'll come in with a new set of answers. I'll role play a new self. Thanks, guys. That was fun.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast or by using our Amazon referral link, which you can find in our show notes or on our website to do your online shopping. Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.